Okay, so we have been discussing about using plants on Shabbos, using anything that grows. So that there's a Issur Muktzah, Gzeirat Rabbanan, not to use plants that grow, meaning that you cannot put something on a tree, cannot take something off a tree, can't climb a tree. Someone who climbed a tree is not allowed, aren't permitted on Shabbos, not allowed to come down. If you climb the tree b'shogeg, can come down. Or if you climb the tree on Erev Shabbos, then we're also going to allow him to come down. So if you climb the tree on Shabbos, then we'll say that he has to stay in the tree. Putting things in the tree, taking things out of the tree. All that would be also, we spoke about starting, the Tzidet starting at the side of a tree. It's just as also as the tree itself. But if it was Tzidet starting, there was a double break between the tree and what you are doing. So if you have a hook, you want to put something on the hook, that's a problem. But if you have a bowl hanging from the hook, now you want to take something in the bowl or take something out of the bowl, that is considered Tzidet starting. That's already two steps away. That would be mutter. We're going to say that the halacha of not using trees and things that grow on Shabbos applies even if there is a necessity, not a mitzvah. For example, your meal is in the tree for whatever reason, and you have nothing to eat except for what's in the tree. It still doesn't make it mutter to take it out. You have a sefer that you need, even if you have no other sefer to learn. The only sefer you have is in the tree. Also no good. Or you have a shofar in the tree and you don't have another one in town. You still can't take it out. Well, this is an Issur Rabbanon. Issur Rabbanon does not become mutter even the Makom Mitzvah. There are exceptions. I'll just mention it. Not so much over here, but there is the sheet of the Bala Itur. He holds that the Makom Mitzvah can be maker of the Rabbanon. It's a Da'as Yochid. It's a single opinion. It's not the accepted opinion. But the reason why I mention it is because don't say that therefore I'm not going to ask a Shaila for this also. If you're in that situation where there is a Rabbanon between you and something that you need to achieve, and it's the Makom Mitzvah, kedai to ask a Shaila, because in certain cases we will rely on the Bala Itur, meaning if it's like Tzarech Rabim, for example, if the lights are out in shul and people can't daven, so you can get a goy to turn the lights on, that would be a shus, be a Rabbanon to tell a goy to turn the lights on, and you're dealing with a Makom Tzarech Rabim, that it's not just one person, it's many people, and it's not a mitzvah, so possibly there's Makom to be maker. I've asked Rabbi Kornfeld this about the air conditioning in shul already in the past. There were cases where he was more maker, cases more machmir, depending on what Shabbos and Yom Tov, what the circumstances was. He wasn't very quick to rely on the Bala Itur, but when necessary, he did allow it. So that's what I'm saying. One should know there is the sheet of what we call the Bala Itur, who allows a Rabbanon but not a mitzvah. But that is only in extenuating circumstances, which I would say is therefore kedai to ask a shaila if you're stuck. But generally speaking, when you have one Rabbanon, and even though it's for Makom Mitzvah, it's in the place of where you were trying to achieve a mitzvah, and you can't because the Rabbanon's in the way, generally we're going to say that it's awesome. But if it's a double Rabbanon, a shvus to shvus, so then the other parts can agree and say that that's what the Gemara there is talking about, not like the Bala Itur. So it's one Rabbanon, it's two Rabbanons. There are those who are machmir there as well, but the accepted psak is in two Rabbanons are going to be maker. Therefore, if you ask a goy to do a Rabbanon, an example given over there is, if you have a shofar in a tree, you can't climb the tree to take the shofar down. You can't even reach out from the ground and take the shofar, because taking the shofar off the tree is hishtamshus ve'ilah, is using the tree. But you can ask a goy to do it, because asking a goy is a Rabbanon, and what's the goy doing? He's doing a Rabbanon. So it's a Rabbanon, before that a shvus to shvus, but mitzvah in a case where you need to fulfill a mitzvah, then we're going to be making. Okay, that was a whole share with Ne'atzmah on using a goy in the Rabbanon. So it comes in over here about using it. It is permissible to walk on lawn, on grass. You don't have to worry about any Yisurim when you walk on the grass, but obviously it has to be done in a way that's not psikresha. What would be a psikresha? If the grass is going to be cut through the fact that you walk on it, then it might be a psikresha or a double shaving miscovering. You have to work out. So Mishnah Berurah gives an example. If you're walking through long grass barefoot, then the long grass gets caught between your toes, and it's almost 100% chance that some grass along the way is going to be ripped. Therefore, it says to walk through long grass barefoot would be a problem on Shabbos. Or even if you're going with shoes, but it's that type of long grass, and if you walk quick enough, it's going through your kicking on the grass or whatever, trampling on the grass, it's going to cause, for sure going to cause grass to get detached. So that's koitzel, that will be also on Shabbos. But generally speaking, walking over grass on Shabbos is not a problem, because generally we say that it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, it's a davar shein miskaven. As long as you don't have a kavanah to do it, usually not the kavanah what a person has when he walks over a lawn. To walk over thorns and little bushes, even if they're dry, and or sometimes in particular when they're dry, because that's when they crack and they snap. So as long as they're still connected to the ground, we said that something that isn't, even if it's no longer getting sustenance from the ground, but it's still connected to the ground, so disconnecting it would be also from a koitzel. So if you walk on a thorn bush where it's going to crack, so that will be a problem on Shabbos. If it was disconnected with a pile of thorns, that's a separate, that wouldn't be a problem. So again, walking on the ground where there's something growing and you know you're not going to uproot the stuff would be permitted if there's a very high chance, almost 100% chance that something's going to be uprooted, broken or something like that, then it would be possible to walk on such a surface. Therefore, it will also follow that even if you tell you that you can walk on grass, there'd be a difference between fast walking, slow walking, running, and things like that, and depending on the length of the grass. If, while you were walking on grass did snap off, but you weren't doing it in a way that it for sure was going to happen, therefore no issur has been done. But now that you have the grass stuck to your foot or your shoe, you should know that this grass is muktzeh. You can't use your fingers to remove it. You may go sit on grass, you may lie down on grass, you can even spread out a blanket or a mat and make yourself comfortable. That's not a problem. There's no issur involved in that. You can even, if there's a bit of long grass in the way, you can even move the grass to the side. Obviously not pulling it out, but you can bend it over a little bit so it gets out of your way. That's also mutter. But we're going to say that soft grass doesn't have the issur of ishtamshus like a tree. The Ramah points out that something that is small and soft on the ground doesn't have the issur ishtamshus. So as long as you're careful not to pull it out, you can even move the grass out of your way. You can sit on the roots of a tree that protrude above ground, so long as they do not reach a height of 3 tefachim. As long as they're within 3 tefachim of the ground, then they're bottom to the ground, and therefore they are not, don't have the issur of ishtamshus v'inon. Once they're higher than that, then it's considered as tree, and you may not sit on it on Shabbos. How much is 3 tefachim? 3 tefachim is generally considered something between 24 and 30 centimeters. I think that translates to between 10 and 12 inches. There are shittas that are machmed of 2 centimeters. Shorter than that, does more like, I think it would be more like 9.5 inches. Smelling plants. So smelling plants on Shabbos is mutter, and even if they are still connected to the bush, and if you have a soft branch that is not the type that's going to become hard, then you can even move that soft branch towards your nose or shake the blossom so that the smell comes out. As long as it's said, A, it's soft and it's not going to get hard. And of course, you've got to be very careful that you don't disconnect anything that while you do this, very gentle. But it would be mutter. What's also is to smell fruit. Smelling fruit while they're on the tree is also, we're afraid that a person might come to pick it. And therefore, Chazal said, do not smell fruits while they're still on the tree. Now, if you have something that was once connected to the tree and now it's not connected to the tree, what is its status? So if you have a fruit, a leaf, a branch, anything like that, that is now lying on the ground. When did it get to the ground? So it depends on when it fell off. If it fell off on Erev Shabbos, you know for sure it fell off on Erev Shabbos, no mukta involved, it's fine. So you can take this item. There might be a separate item that a twig that fell off a tree is mukta in and of itself, just like what we call Eitzim Avon, and mukta makes gufa. Sticks, stones, sand, and all those type of things are useless, and therefore they're mukta. So we'd have to have a special yichud from Erev Shabbos. So we're talking about something that has, that's not that type of wood. It would be a leaf that you're going to use for spices, or a twig that, or some sort of branch that has fruit on it, or you've got fruit, or something like that. Something which is obviously intrinsically not mukta. And now the question is, when did it disconnect itself from the ground? So if it disconnected itself, you certainly disconnected itself from the ground before Shabbos, then there's no problem. if it fell off the tree on Shabbos, so then it's mukta, and this, we may not touch it, may not move it, pick it up, or use it. And in a case of a suffix, whether it was on the tree or not, now if you came Friday morning and you saw it was still hanging on the tree, you came Shabbos morning and it was on the floor, so you know that it fell somewhere in the last 24 hours, so it's a suffix whether that happened before Shabbos or after Shabbos. Halacha is you've got to go on the Chumrah and treat it as if it fell on Shabbos. We do have certain circumstances, but not so much in the tree. In a case of an egg, if you checked a chicken coop just before Yom Tov and you checked it again on Yom Tov day and you found just before Yom Tov it was empty, Yom Tov day it was full. So then we say that a chicken lays eggs only. Sorry, you didn't check it. You checked it before daybreak. You checked it before Yom Tov was empty. You checked it before daybreak and there was an egg there. So then there's a discussion that a chicken does not lay eggs at night. So if you found an egg there, maybe Tucker, it was laid in between the time you saw it last and sunset. If you checked it just before sunset, so the Gemara wants to say that maybe the chicken started to lay it, went back in again, and it's out, and then it came out, and there's a whole discussion over there, because fact is, chickens don't lay eggs at night. If you came before daybreak and found an egg, it had to have been this egg was laid, or at least partially laid, before sunset of the previous evening, and therefore it doesn't get a din of mukta. But we take it that seriously, when the Chazal tell us chickens don't lay eggs at night, we take it that seriously, that the weirdest thing must have happened. Something strange must have happened, but it would not have been. But on a tree, we don't have a tree. Fruits fall off a tree at all hours and all times. And therefore, if you observed a tree and saw a fruit hanging from the tree, and later you saw it on the floor, there's no way to know when it fell. It's a regular suffix, and therefore you look as a suffix, and suffix in this case would be also. So too, if a goy picked it, the goy picked it on Shabbos, or he picked it at a time that we don't know, we suspect that he picked it on Shabbos. And also, since even though he picked it for himself, so we say that a goy's hachana for himself doesn't help for us, and therefore it remains mukta. So if your goyish neighbor comes to you Shabbos afternoon and offers you a fresh fruit that he picked from his tree, that'll be choshes that it was picked on Shabbos and use that cannot have anoch on Shabbos. Now there's another halacha. Even if the fruit fell off the tree on Friday, but you left it on the ground, there's a problem of collecting. The problem of collecting the fruit is the melacha of ma'amir. Ma'amir is when the produce is on the ground and it is collected. So it's after koitzer comes ma'amir, after it has been disconnected, then it gets collected. And collecting is an issue of ma'amir. And we goizer also that ma'amir is a problem even if it didn't fall off the tree but it fell out of your basket. And it depends where it fell. But if it's a mokum that is normal for fruits to grow, so it doesn't matter how it got there, still collecting it in the field would be a problem. If you're carrying a basket of fruit and the basket tipped over and now the fruit is lying on the ground and you want to pick them up, so we say that only if they're in a place where they don't usually grow, like in the yard or something like that, usually they grow in the field, in the garden, but not in the yard. So if they're in the yard, then you can pick them up, but you should be careful not to gather them all together, but rather pick them up one by one. And also it should only be done if there is a need to have these foods, you want to eat them today. If you just gather them and put them in the fridge for tomorrow, that's not good enough. That wouldn't be allowed. And also, one should not, when picking them up one by one, you should not put them back in the basket. You should take each one and bring it in. Because we worried that if you collect them and put them into a bowl, it gets a din of ufdin the chol. This is how you do it during the week. Then we don't want you to do them in Shabbos. If the bowl turned over and they all landed in one closed spot, so then it's not there, there's no gathering, and you can take the whole pile that fell and as is and put it back in the basket. If as a result of falling on the ground, they got mixed in with pebbles and dirt and leaves and grass and who knows what, so then you cannot separate, it would be a problem of fire. So if you need to eat them now, so you take out the food one by one, open the chutzlis, and you would do it for immediate use. If you have something that falls on the floor in the house, so then the way to do it would be to sweep it up into a pile and then gather it up into the bowl. Don't go pick one here and pick one here, pick one here. That's just a tircha, but rather collect everything as it is on the floor and then put it into the bowl. It's not a problem of amir over here because it's not in the place where they grow, it's in a different place, from Mav Tircha and Yudin Dachon, therefore you should try to minimize it and sweep them and gather them up all together and then put it into your bowl. Okay, another interesting halachas that have to do with growing items is a vase. Or some people say a vase, I call it a vase. A container that has water inside and you put in cut flowers. Now there's interesting, the Gemara talks about this in Sukkah because people have their Arba Minim in water of the Yom Tov, and the question is, can you put it into the water? Can you add water? Can you change? And we have three different halachas. On Shabbos you can put it in, and Yom Tov you can add, and Chol HaMoed you can change. But it's not so simple, let me explain. First of all, the vase and the flowers inside are not muktzah. Second of all, you may not put flowers into water on Shabbos if they were not in the water on Shabbos itself. In other words, even if they were in the water on Friday, but for some reason, when Shabbos came in, they were no longer in the water, they cannot be put back into the water anymore. If they were in the water on Shabbos, and for some reason they came out, so then you can put them back into the water on Shabbos on condition. And that condition is that there is no more future growth involved with this plant. Meaning, if you have a cut flower where there is still a bud that can open up and flower, so then it's going to develop, it's going to get into something more, then you may not put it back into the water. But if what you have for cut flowers is basically leaves, filler, and those type of things where there's no blossoming flowers going to open up, or your flowers already opened up and now it's just going to continue wilting, so then you can put it back into the water because it's not going to continue opening up. So again, to put flowers into water on Shabbos is awesome. If they were in water on Shabbos, the fact that they were in water on Friday doesn't count. If they were in water on Shabbos, then they can be put back if there's no further growth involved, which generally we would say applies to stems and twigs and leaves and those type of things in filler, but not so much to flowers, because flowers are still going to open. The answer we say that not only could you put it back like on Shabbos, but you can do even more. You can add water. But on Shabbos, you may not add water. So even if the water level has dropped, the flowers have drunk everything up, or it's a spilt, whatever it is, you may not add water whatsoever on Shabbos, but you may add water on Yom Tov. Chol HaMoed, the chiddush is that you can even change it. Throw the water out and put fresh water in. And as I said, that comes from the din of a lulav. The lulav doesn't have a flower on it, and therefore it was very common in the olden days. Today we have all sorts of plastic bags, covers, silver foil, and towels. And every balabos has his own set of rules of how he keeps his aluminium and how he works. You know, my aerobus lasted 4 days, mine lasted 5 days because I did this and I did that and I put it in the fridge and I did that. Everybody's got his shtick or how he does it. But in olden days, a little simpler, and I'm not even referring to olden days. I'm referring to even when I was a teenager. I remember in our shul, in Kutzaritz, we had a very big trough that was filled with water, and the lulav was placed in the trough with water. And you came to shul on Yom Tov morning, and you took your lulav out. You had a little tag on it that said your name, and you took it out, and you brought it into shul. And when you were finished, you put it back into the trough. Some people took it home, but there was no eruv. So, okay, Yom Tov, you don't need an egg and carry, but very often the woman, the children came to shul, you shook your lulav in shul, put it back in your trough the overnight, the next morning. So on Yom Tov, you took your lulav out, and you used challah and hashanah and all this, and after that, you put it back into the water. Fine. Even on Shabbos, you can put it back in the water. Shabbos happens to be a separate problem, that the lulav is a chepetz mitzvah, and therefore a lulav is mukta on Shabbos. But if it were not for that, you could actually put it back into the water on Shabbos, if you have Shabbos. So Yom Tov Yizichin could put it back, and if for some reason the water level dropped too low, you could even add water in. The water got dirty and smelly, you have to wait for Chol HaMoed to change. Which would follow on that if a person has his lulav wrapped in a towel, a wet towel, so that also would be something that you could not put it in the chatchila, but if it was in the wet towel, and now he took it out and shook it, used it, now he wants to put it back, you can put it back into the wet towel. Obviously he has to handle the towel gently that it doesn't cause come to squeeze it. But here we're going to say you cannot add water, not because on Yom Tov you can't add water, on Yom Tov you can, but here there's a separate problem with the towel. If you add too much water to the towel, you get to a problem of schita. Therefore we say, don't wet the towel more on Yom Tov, but that's not because of the plant story about it, but rather the schita story about it. One more halacha that pertains to gardens, gardening, and all the rest is, question asked, are flowers mukta? budding flowers, meaning that they haven't yet opened, they are not mukhzah. You have flowers in a vase, irrelevant of whether they true. When they're budding and they fell out, you can't put them back in again. But so long as they're in the water, they are not mukhzah. You can carry the vase around, even if there are buds that are not open. They are neither them nor the vase are mukhzah. Pot plants, we said, are, but vases are not. Oh, another thing I forgot to mention is that if the cutoffs that you have put into water were put there in order to take root, like people who like to grow their arabis, they put their arabis in the water, and then after a while the fresh roots come out, then A, you can't put them back into the water, because your purpose is you want them to grow. So if they came out, you can't put them back in, if that was your purpose. And B, if they've already shown roots coming out, then you can't even take them out, because that would be considered koitzer. So even though they're growing in sand or soil, they're growing in water, once they're showing roots, so this is now considered makom gidula, this is considered where they grow, then you can't take them out of the water. So what we said is that when talk about cut flowers or cut trees or twigs or whatever, your lulav that you're taking out, because you have no intention of growing the lulav. You're just keeping it fresh by keeping the water. Your cut flowers also, you're keeping them fresh. Chances are that they'll go bad to get roots. But your purpose is not for the sake of the roots. So as I said, one more halacha that pertains to gardening and all the rest, and that is an isur of mimtzei chefzecha, where there are restrictions that Chazal told us to keep in order to make sure that our Shabbos looks different from our weekdays. Our speech is different on Shabbos. We don't talk about malachas on Shabbos. We talk about business on Shabbos. We also don't do things which show that I'm intending, I'm preparing to do a malacha. One of the examples bring is you don't go sit at a bus stop on Shabbos afternoon waiting for the first bus that's coming out. Shabbos morning, no one thinks you're sitting at the bus stop waiting for the bus at the bus stop, because that's where there is shade and you can get out of the sun. But on late Shabbos afternoon, one shouldn't be sitting at a bus stop. Someone thinks you're waiting for the first bus to come round. There will be a problem of mitzvah chetzecha. You haven't said anything, but it's the way you do it. So you had a bit in the field. Is that a person shouldn't go for a walk in his garden or his field so that he can see what work needs to be done on Sunday. You know, this is a good time to observe where the weeds are and what needs more fertilizer and what needs more water. That is something that you may not do on Shabbos. Doesn't mean you can't take a walk. If you enjoy taking a stroll in your garden, you have a big backyard and it's beautiful and it's flowering, and you want to go out and admire all the geraniums and who knows what else you've got planted, and you've spent a lot of money having a garden at the Vakasha, go enjoy that sort of thing, what this world is for. And if you see something, oh gosh, this one's dying, this one's got weeds, so you see it. But you can't go with the purpose of, oh, the garden is coming on Sunday or Monday, let's go see what we can prepare to tell him. You never take notes. You just, you know, mentally taking mental notes, that is also mission mitzvah. And that takes us to the end of plant-related halachas, and in Metz Hashem, and our next year we'll continue with animal-related halachas. As I said, next week there won't be a shiur, but in 2 weeks' time there will be. Now that we have a few more minutes, we'll just mention a couple of things that have to do with shvuos. Very interesting. I saw a chiddush in Rabbi Kaf Sefer on shvuos. I was looking up the story of eating milchit on shvuos. Something we all know about comes from as early as the Kolboy. One of the Rishonim writes that Torah is compared to milk, as compared to honey, to have honey and to have milk. When everybody knows what the Mishaburah brings, the Shem God Lechot, that they couldn't have fleishiks because they were all the dishes of trays and that shchita. So on the very first Shavuos, they had to eat milchiks because fleishiks was not available. So whatever it is, there's an Indian to eat milchiks, but there's also an Indian to eat fleishiks. How do you reconcile the two, since we are Jews and we don't eat it together? So cheeseburgers is not an eitzah of having your milchiks and your fleishiks. Therefore, the later contemporary in the Achronim discuss how to do this in the best fashion. I have a minute, I'll talk about it first, but I want to first bring up the chiddush that I saw, very interesting, is one of the reasons why we eat milchiks. Every Yom Tov we have a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. It's Yom Tov time, and therefore we should be rejoicing that it is Yom Tov. And therefore, one of the ways to get us to be happy is to do an external physical activity which brings us to Simcha. And the Gemara actually tells us that there are different people react differently. Men prefer the boss of the yayin. Women would prefer perhaps jewelry and clothing. And children prefer candies and sweet things. Obviously, it's not exclusive. There are adults who like candies and men who like clothing. There are women who like good wine. But generally speaking, and therefore in halacha, it's also it's not exclusive that this is the only thing you can do. If a woman's not interested in getting a new dress, but she just got one, it was a chasen, it was basic, it was ever. But if she likes a good steak, so buy a wife a good steak for Shabbos, it's for Yom Kippur, so fine. But this is the way that we do in order to commemorate and to celebrate the Simcha of Yom Kippur. We do what the Torah tells us. You have basar yayin, you have meat and wine. Meat is a discussion we've shown him already, maybe it's only in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, we have a chagiga, and therefore you only when you have the shlomim, so you ate meat. Maybe wine is on its own. And so, yes. So now the Maaseh, we try to be machmir to have wine. If a person comes forward, if a person doesn't like it, there's absolutely no reason why you skip it. These halachas are made to enjoy it, therefore not to cause you tsar. If you don't like meat, no mitzvah to eat meat. You like chicken, mitzvah. If you like fish, so eat fish. Says Rav Akiva that Shavuos has another facet to it. That is, that we are showing simcha into the fact that we were given the Torah. It's not just simcha that it's a Yom Tov, which exists in Shavuos, but it's also another simcha that you have that we got the Torah. And he makes a difference between the two. He says the simcha that we commemorate in Yom Tov is we have to go and do something which makes us happy. We have to go buy meat. If a person doesn't have meat, then it is the chiyuv of the locality to worry about it, that the Anim have meat on their table for Yom Tov. Because you have to, that there's no other way to get to Simchas Yom Tov than by doing the way the Chazal promised to have the boss of the Yayin. But he says the Simcha of Torah comes about through learning Torah. So therefore, it doesn't make a difference whether you're poor or rich. Everybody has the access to Torah. And therefore, the Simcha comes about by learning Torah. So he says from that facet of Shavuos, which is the Simchas HaTorah, that's good enough. We eat milchiks to show that we're not going to spend money on meat because we don't need it. What we need is the learning in order to get to that part of Simchas HaTorah. Obviously, there still is the chiyuv of having Simcha for Yom Tov, or the Yom Tov itself. Therefore, we do have a chiyuv to eat meat and Yom Tov as well. But this was just he was explaining one of the reasons why we eat milchiks to show that at this time we're also commemorating the Simchas HaTorah, not just in the Yom Tov. Kiddush that I saw in Rabbi Karp this year that I wanted to share. See, we still have another 3-4 minutes. So I'll just mention the various options that are given for how to cater to the milk of your needs. The problem is that when do you have your milk? Because if you take the halakha literally, that you need to eat meat on Yom Tov, and the chayyur, the chiyuv to eat meat is at the night meal and the day meal. So when are you going to eat milk? So there were various minhagim. The Ramah says that you take your Yom Tov meal and you divide it in two. If I remember correctly, it's not 100% clear from the Ramah which of the meals he's referring to. But what I know is that people who do the Ramah's custom do it at night, but you could do it just as well in the day. And that means you have a double meal. You start off your meal with challah and a milchik, of course. Then you clear the table and you go have a fleishik, of course. And when you have the flesh, of course, you take away the challah that you use for the meal, and you bring up fresh challah. So it's not only do you gain that you eat milchiks, but you're also doing a zeichel shtei alechem, a special problem that we brought in Shavuos, the two fresh loaves of wheat. The omer was the first loaves of barley, and the shtei alechem was the first loaves of wheat for the year. And now, like this, you're taking two separate sets of challah for the table, one for the milchik part, one for the flesh part. You would kind of need so shtei alechem as well. And you eat milchiks and you eat fleishiks. Obviously, you cannot eat them at the same time, and therefore you need to clear the table, reset the table, drink something, or rinse your mouth out and wash your hands in between, and you have two meals. There is an issue brought up that our people Zohar, you shouldn't be eating milchiks and fleishiks at the same meal. Even if you're separating them, you have the milchiks first, and then you're having the fleishiks. Nevertheless, it shouldn't be at the same meal. You should bench and make a break. There are those who are machmir to this, and as Rabbi Karp writes, Kodesh Yomer Loi, that is a holy thing to do. If a person is machmir, you always keep this, that you don't eat milchiks and fleishiks, A, at the same meal, and B, within the same time frame. Exactly what he means by shaita chada, one time. Doesn't mean 1 hour, one time, maybe a break. Some people say half an hour, some people say an hour. But yet, those who do it, we saw the Chazanish, I saw brought down the Chazanish that he did not keep this Zohar on Shavuos night. Special kul on Shavuos night. Perhaps he would have done it during the year, I don't know, but on Shavuos night he didn't do it with the others, and I've been to a family of Shavuos where they make milchits, leishiks, and wash up and in between, but not venting. There's a minute left of my kikatala. I just mentioned the Munkacha brings that his minig was to have a kiddush after Shachris in the morning, the Zonus and Milchiks, but the two main meals of Yom Tov were proper fleshy meals, and he says that way you avoid all the problems of that you have fleshy for your meals, and that you